Lorinda, and I can't really put into a whole lot of words. I've only talked with her once on the phone prior to this, and I got to spend this weekend with her. And Jerry said to be brief, and that gets me off the hook so I don't have to be long-winded. But what I will tell you that I know about the short time that I've spent with Lorinda, she is what I would aspire to be in recovery. She has strength, courage. She is an example of that. No matter how bad things get in life, you don't have to drink over it. And when you hear her story, as I've heard a little bit, I think you'll really agree with me. And so I'd like to introduce Lorinda.
My name is Lorinda, and I am a very grateful recovering alcoholic. First, I want to thank Jerry and the committee for inviting me. It's always nice to play a part in my own sobriety. And I think that God has a way of putting people together. And he certainly has Janice and me this weekend. And for that, I'm very grateful. Now, I always have Kleenex because I always cry when I share because I'm very grateful for my sobriety. And I share tears of gratitude, not tears of sadness. So you guys get to watch me make ugly faces. And I also have a bottle of water because it's my pacifier. My sobriety date is November 18th of 1994. And for that, I'm very grateful. That's a very special day around our house because my daughter was turning 2 and Mom was getting sober. So she always likes to let everybody know that she's 2 years older than me. I love our little daily reflections. And I read this one morning, and Nora said, "Honey, you can get up behind the podium, you can read that and sit down, because that's your story." So I'm going to share it with you guys. And it's on March 31st, and it says, "No one denied me love." This is conference-approved literature, by the way. On the AA calendar, it was year 2. A newcomer appeared at one of these groups. He soon proved that his was a desperate case and that, above all, he wanted to get well. He said, "Since I am the victim of another addiction, even worse stigmatized than alcoholism, you may not want me among you." That comes from our 12 and 12, pages 141 and 42. Goes on to say, "I came to you a wife, mother, woman who had walked out on her husband, children, family. I was a drunk, a pillhead, a nothing. Yet no one denied me love, caring, a sense of belonging. Today, by God's grace and the love of a good sponsor and a home group, I can say that through you and Alcoholics Anonymous, I am a wife, a mother, a grandmother, and a woman. Sober, free of pills, responsible. Without a higher power I found in the fellowship, my life would be meaningless. I am full of gratitude to be a member of good standing in Alcoholics Anonymous." For that, I thank you guys. I used to say that I took my first drink around 11 or 12. My daughter's age. Yeah. But the longer I'm around and the more honest we get, I think back that one of my earliest memories, I was crawling around on my mother's countertops in her kitchen. And I was looking for this bottle, and I didn't understand what was in the bottle. I just knew that when I found the bottle, it was about that big around. And it was in a brown bottle. And I knew that when I found that bottle, I was going to drink every bit of it. And I didn't understand anything about alcoholism then, but I do now. What that was in that bottle was Paragark. And for those of you that don't remember what Paragark is, that is, it's opium. And then I used to think that, think back, and I would, when I would get sick, my mom gave us whiskey, lemon juice, and honey, little toddies. Hated the way that mess tasted. Never liked the way alcohol tasted, because I never drank it for the taste. Drank it for pure effect. But I liked the way those little toddies made me feel. And I was always the first one in line. I wanted it. And didn't understand alcoholism then, but I do now. So I don't argue, I don't think that I drank myself into anything. I think that I was just one waiting to happen. I believe that I have the allergy to alcohol. Never felt like I fit, never felt like I was good enough, never felt that I belonged anywhere. Not even in my own home, in my own family, even in my own skin. Walked around, and I can remember that I had that hole in my soul for as long as I could remember, all my life. Around 11 or 12, I drank a pint of hot vodka, and I chased it with a Tallboy Hot Slits beer. First time out of the chute, I drank alcoholically. I don't know anything about social drinking. I got a friend that can lets a glass of wine get warm. I don't understand that kind of drinking, you know. She leaves stuff in the glass. I don't understand that kind of drinking. I don't, you know, I know nothing about it. So first time out of the chute, I drank alcoholically. Got sick, and I got in trouble. First time out of the chute. And that's the way my drinking went. That's the only kind of drinking I understand. You know, I hear people say, oh, I just love the taste of a good cold beer. And I just know they're lying. Because it doesn't, nothing about it tastes good to me. You know, nothing tastes good about it to me. But I couldn't wait till I did it again. My mother was the alcoholic. She'll tell you that. She got her sobriety in church. I couldn't get it there. We were great enemies for many, many years. And she could not stand me, and I could not stand her. We're good friends today. She's in early stages of Alzheimer's, and God's given me the gift of sobriety so that I can be there for my mother. And that's a gift straight from you guys and the God that I know today. She was a violent drunk. My dad was a workaholic. I'm the baby of four kids, and my daddy will tell you to this day, I'm 42 years old, and he'll tell you that I'm his baby girl. And he spoilt me rotten all my life. Never knew the man knew the word no in his vocabulary where I was concerned. I always said that I was not going to be the kind of mother that my mother was. My mother would, we'd get up and by 10 o'clock in the morning she had dinner cooked, house spotless, and we hit the road to the state line because it was dry where we were from. We live right on the state line of Tennessee and Mississippi, and her family owned beer joints, and I emphasize the word joint, on the state line. So we would go up there, and I would be set behind the bar with a bag of chips and a Coke, and I'd sit there and I'd watch. And see, I blamed her for a whole lot of years for my alcoholism, you know. That had nothing to do with me being an alcoholic. Nothing at all. So I was 17 years old, and I got pregnant with my oldest daughter. And dropped out of school, dropped out of high school. And didn't get married, and that was a big no-no. You know, mom disowned me and all that kind of stuff. And I was just always kind of the rebel type. Had that little girl, and I can tell you today that I was not the kind of mother that my mother was. I was not half the mother that my mother was to me. Because 2 weeks out of the chute, I was right back doing what I was doing. And just more than ever. I thought that if you had gave the kid a nice home, nice clothes, all the toys, all the things, and I did not beat my child, she had food, she had clothes, that was being a good parent. That was being a good parent. DHR came and took that child from me and publicly declared me an unfit mother because I was emotionally neglecting my child because I did not feel. I did not know how to feel. I was an empty soul for many years. And I was off and running. There was no holes barred. I didn't have to put up a front, see. It was me and my bottle. Me and my bottle. And that's the way I always wanted it anyway. I was getting ready to go to work in one of those bars because I spent a lot of time in bars. I worked in bars and I did a lot of other illegal activity in bars and made a lot of money in bars. And I was getting ready to go to that job and was putting on that makeup that I hid behind. You know, I mean, I would cake it on. You know, I would hide. And I know it's my precious God doing for me what I wasn't willing to do for myself. But I looked in that mirror and I said, you know, you've never tried to look yourself in the mirror. And I tried. And I was terrified. I fell to pieces. Because what was looking back at me was nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I could not stand what I saw. So I fell to pieces. I get to the phone and I call my oldest sister, who was always like a mother to me. And I said, I'm having a nervous breakdown. You know? Of course, they've been waiting on this call for a long time. And so here she comes, her and my mom, and I had this attorney friend, and if you lived the kind of life I lived, an attorney was always a good thing to have in your back pocket. And so here he come, and he was a great enabler of mine for many years. He's sober for many years in this program today, and I'm grateful for his sobriety too, because he brought me to you guys the first time. He began talking to me about going to a treatment center. And he began talking to me about 42 days. Well, in the meantime, before they got there, I found some of those nerve pills. And so when the troops got there, I'd already calmed down a little bit. But, you know, since I'd called them in, I had to, you know, I had to kind of pacify them. And so I'm talking about 42 days, and I laughed. I said, I haven't gone 42 minutes without going putting something inside of me. 42 days is ridiculous because I could not conceive life without alcohol. Couldn't do it. What does one do? What does one do for fun? You know? My precious husband always said alcohol was his solution. And that was, no, it was my solution. So he said, well, just go out here and talk to this lady. I thought, okay, I'll go out here, talk to the lady, get the troops off back, and then I'll come home, I'll go on to work, and I'll finish doing my deal. I come out from talking to this woman, there's a suitcase there. My mom and sister had been back there packing a suitcase, and they had left, and I'd officially been dumped in my first treatment center, and I don't mind telling you, I was pissed off. And so I couldn't use the phone for 3 days, and couldn't, and I didn't know how to get out of there, so I was. And so I thought, okay, I'll play this game. Third day, I got on the phone. I called one of my friends, one of my men friends. And we were going to some kind of meeting. I knew nothing about it. And I told him, we're going to some kind of meeting tonight, and you better be there and you better have me something. He said, I know exactly where that meeting is. So I walked in, and I don't know how he figured it out, but you could pop the bottom of a big lighter out. He stuffed it full of Valium because you couldn't smell it. Pop the bottom back in that lighter, and we'd swap lighters at the meetings. And I used to say I didn't get anything out of that treatment center. But that was a lie. That was a lie because what I did get out of that treatment center, I walked in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 21 years old. And I was not one of you guys. I just have you know. Walked in there and there was two things I saw. First, I saw a bunch of old farts sitting around the room smoking cigarettes that I had nothing in common with. Nor did I want anything in common with you people because I was too young. I was too smart. I was too fill in the blank. I was not like you people. Second thing I saw, I looked up on the wall and I saw that word God. And I said, ooh, no way they're going to get that religion crap in on me and I don't want any part of it. Because see, I'd been beat to death with religion. I'd been taught of this, get you God. You do this, you're going to hell. You do that, you're going to hell. Now, I'm going to tell you, I don't know if that's what that church taught, but that's what I heard. That was my perception. I didn't hear of a loving, caring, forgiving God that I've come to know in these rooms. I had been divorced. Well, that nailed my coffin shut in hell. There was no hope for me. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to, you know, God, you stay over there on that side. I stay on this side. I don't bother you. You don't bother me. I knew there was one, kind of like a president. I know we got one, but I don't have a personal relationship with him. And that's kind of the way me and God was. So That was my first AA meeting. I can tell you, I got out of the AA. I got on a pass and I met this man. He met all my requirements. He was one of the largest drug dealers in the state of Alabama, and I didn't have to work, and he had what I needed, and that was good. A year later, I found myself sitting on the staircase of our house. He'd left me for another woman, and I don't know how long I'd been there. I weighed 87 pounds soaking wet, and I knew I was dying. And everything that I heard in these rooms came back to me. That's why we can't ever give up on the newcomer, because the seeds are being planted. We're throwing them out there. Because I want to tell you something, I heard you guys. I heard you. I heard you in my head. I heard you in my soul. And I don't mind telling you, I didn't like you. because it was nothing was ever the same after that. Called that lady back at that treatment center, and I said, I'm dying and I need some help. And she said, well, we've done all we can for you here, but if you're serious and you want help, I'll get you in a treatment center. So anyway, I was going to be sick. Some things, I was going to be detoxed. And I was going to be a very sick person. And so I had to go to the hospital and get a shot. I called my dad one more time. He had gone to these family groups, this treatment center, and he learned a word that I didn't know he had. And he came in the room and he looked at me, and it's the first time I ever heard my dad cry, because my dad was always my hero. He said, I will not watch you kill yourself anymore. You will do something this time or I'm finished. And I know that was very hard on him. I used to think tough love was hard on me, but it wasn't. It was tough on my dad. And he said, he cried, and he picked me up in his arms, and he had to take me in that hospital, and he had to take me into that treatment center. And I was in detox for 14 days. I couldn't have visitors. And I didn't care. Then I got out of detox. I walked out back, and it was a beautiful day, about like it was today, maybe a little cooler. And I sat down on a blanket, and I looked around, and I said, God, I don't know anything about you. But they tell me that you can do all these things. You're going to have to show me, because I don't know. I don't have anywhere else to go. From that day to this day, my life began to change, and that was in 1985. Stayed there for 2.5 months, went to a halfway house, very active in another 12-step fellowship when I got to Birmingham. I was in treatment a year that time. I got in service work. I had a relationship with a God that I understood. I worked with newcomers, and my life began to change. Things began to come back to me very easily. You know, it's a job. You know, I began to go to school. You know, got my GED, began to go to school. And I got back involved in one of those old relationships. And I regained custody of Ashley. That's my oldest child. And I moved home the day I regained custody of her back to Florence. And I needed to stay home and be a mother to that child. Because, see, I had not been. I needed to stay home. I got married. I needed to stay home and be a wife. Didn't have time to go to meetings every night. Didn't have time to take those phone calls. We continued to pray, but eventually I stopped that. And I can remember on the way to the liquor store that night, I had this conversation in my head, back and forth. You know what's going to happen. Yeah, but it's just alcohol. I'm a dope fiend. I'm not a drunk. That was the justification I had in my head. That was the last reservation that I had held on to. I told him, I said, get me 4 little peach wine coolers, because that's when they first got popular. Before he got his beer ice down, I had knocked out those peach wine coolers, sent him back in for a fifth. And I was off and running for the next 5 years. And I can tell you, the next 5 years of my life was living screaming hell. 28 years old, I went into full-blown liver failure. That wasn't supposed to happen to me. I lost the homes. I lost the vehicles. I lost my family. He didn't want anything to do with me. You know, all those yets. You know. Started sliding on down that scale, sliding on down that elevator. And got to the point, I was in the 400 unit, which is the nut ward where we are in our town. I don't know what you call it. I was in there for another nervous breakdown. And I'm sitting in there and I'm looking at these poor sick people. And I'm judging them. And I'm thinking, you poor sick so-and-so. You know, in all my alcoholic arrogance. Sitting there judging these people. And I'm thinking, and this is true thinking in my head. I'm thinking, you know what? Because that ex-husband he was at the time nice looking. He liked women. He didn't hide it, you know. And I thought, you know, I'm going to find the ugliest, dumbest one man, and I'm going to marry him. 5 days out of the 400 unit, I met him. And I want to say something about this man, though. He has a good heart. He's an alcoholic. He'll tell you he's an alcoholic. A wonderful sense of humor. He knows what the program is. He's been to the meetings. He's had a sponsor. He knows that he's had the literature. And I pray for him every day that he finds what I found in these rooms. Because he's one of God's kids, you know. And I love him as such. Out of that marriage, I had a beautiful little girl. And when I got pregnant with that little girl, it was going to be different. I was going to do things different. Could not wait to get her here. Had that little girl and, you know, and I was a good mother. I was a good mother. Stopped going to bars. Didn't go to bars anymore. Didn't drink anything till she was 7 months old. And began to drink beer. Because what's a little beer, right? A little harmless. So anyway, got to the point. We went through a very ugly divorce due to alcoholism and addiction. I would close my blinds. I was doing good to take a bath. My oldest daughter, Ashley, was not allowed to have company over. I would not answer my phone. See, I knew that if I drank before noon, I was an alcoholic. I was not an alcoholic. So I would start my day off with 5-10 milligram Valiums and a cup of coffee to get me. And I would do that until the afternoon because, see, I was not an alcoholic. And then I would drink. I got to where I was. Three places I would go, and that was the doctor's office, the pharmacy, and the liquor store. That was it. We lived close enough to school for my kid to walk to school. And I stayed at home, and I played with my daughter. I played with that baby. We spent endless hours together. My parents began to get worried about me. See, I began school in nursing. That's what I needed to do, wasn't it? So my dad came along and he said, you know, they're coming. My mother opened up the cabinet and there was a stack of stakeout plastic cups that fell out and hit her on the head. And she said, is this what y'all are living off of? And I said, well, yeah. I mean, don't everybody? And so, her and my dad got together and he said, you know, I think we need to close up your house, put everything in storage. You need to move back in with mom and go back to nursing school. Sounded good to me. I didn't have anything going on. So I moved back home with my mother. And God had other plans. God had other plans. Amber and Ashley and I moved in with my mother. And we were, I went to pick my, Ashley up at the fair. And, I had gotten a DUI. I came back from the liquor store and lost my license for 90 days. Got him back one day, left to go to the fair to pick Ashley up. Didn't make it to the fair. Got another DUI. Got out that next morning. And I was on my way home, and I was going down this road, and a pint of whiskey slipped out from underneath the seat of the car. They just happened to miss it the night before when they went through the car. Picked it up, and I looked at that bottle, and it was at that second that I fully conceded to my innermost self that I, too, was an alcoholic. That hole in my soul was consuming me. And I threw that pint of whiskey over the roof of that car and it hit that pavement and I heard it slide and I pray I never forget it because I forgot it one time and I went back. What that takes me back to is the terror, the utter surrender. I was just so tired. I was so sick. And I called out to this God thing one more time. And I said, if this is all it is in this life for me, you can have it. I don't want it. But if there's another way, you're going to have to show me. Better be careful what you pray for. I get home and I walk into that wall of contempt. Ashley's sitting there and she's wouldn't let me put my arms around her. She hated my guts. Amber, bless her heart, she's always loved me unconditionally. Just right up my arms. You know, I'm her mom. Talking to my sister that had disowned me. And I said, you know, I think I'd like to go to a meeting. And she said, well, why don't you go? I said, I ain't going by myself. And y'all know some of those words left my mouth. I got a beep on the other line, and it was a lady I'd been in treatment with in 1984 that I had met when I was 12. And she said, it's John, which is her husband's 8th birthday. Do you want to go to a meeting? So God sent me back right back to y'all one more time. But something had changed in me when I came back in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was so very grateful that you guys allowed me back in here and allowed me to be one of you. You people have shared your God with me and has shown me that I can live without alcohol. My life today is a true miracle. When I got here, if I'd have settled for what I wanted, I'd have sold myself short. All I wanted was the pain to stop and people get off my back. But what I got was a whole lot more. I knew the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I could quote it page and verse. And my first sponsor in this program's husband loved me enough to tell me about myself. What was it Herb said last night? Loved me too much to leave me the way I was. Tell me to sit down and shut up and listen because I didn't know nothing about staying sober. I needed to sit and listen and learn how to apply it to my life. He loved me enough to tell me that, because I can imagine this man's head exploding off his shoulders. I despised him. But I kept going back because I wanted what they had. You know, they showed me how to truly 12-step, to do a 12-step. How to truly carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and not carry the alcoholic. Tell me things like, I care more about your life than what you think of me. And if I'm hurting your feelings, you need to get your feelings out of the way because we're not trying to save your feelings. We're trying to save your butt. But anyway, and God put many beautiful teachers in my life. In sobriety, God allowed me to go back. Well, I got really sick in sobriety. My liver got sick again. Went on some treatments. And through all that, God always tends to bring good out of every situation in my life. It doesn't matter what it is. And I was afforded full tuition paid to go back to school. I got my undergrad in criminal justice and political science. God has a sense of humor. I passed the Alabama background check. Nora said, we're going to frame it, baby. did my internship in the state parole office. And that was a ride. I knew half the people coming in there reporting. Don't mind telling you, they gave me some funny looks. But that was okay, too. Two requirements when I got out of college. One was I was not going to work in mental health. Certainly not substance abuse. Well, no other doors opened for me. And I went to work at Riverbend, the mental health facility in our area. And most of my caseload is substance abuse. And I cannot believe that I get paid to do what I do. It is just so unbelievable. Because I get to spend all day with people just like us. You know? And I've even been allowed to share some of my experience, strength, and hope with those people. And been able to carry the message. I've been able to give a meeting list, get them hooked up with people in the program. You know? I can't believe I do that. God has a sense of humor. Getting ready to go back and work on another degree. Excuse me. Due to some other changes that has happened in my life recently. Sobriety. I met a lady when I was in junior high school. And I was afforded the opportunity to come in the program with her and sponsor for 18 months. She went back out. She came by May 11th of 1998 was my last day of actual physical labor. And she came by my house and I didn't even recognize her. And she said, I heard you were sick and I wanted to come check on you. I said, I'm good. And I said, how are you? She threw that head back. She said, I'm fine. And I said, are you not sick of that crap yet? She just busted out crying. She said, I'm so sick of it, I don't know what to do. And I said, yes, you do. You got a support system. The only thing that's missing is you. If you want to get sober, give me a call. We'll be there. She said, well, we got some beer and some Beam and some dope. We're going to the creek. We're going to party one more time. I said, I'll call you tomorrow. We'll go to a meeting. Next morning, I get up, and I'm doing my meditation, turn on the TV, and there she is all over the news. She had a wreck, amputated her leg at the scene, and killed an elderly couple. She was charged and tried on two counts of first-degree murder and serving two life sentences. I'm going to tell you something. God has put some awesome examples of courage and strength in my life. That woman called me one Thanksgiving. I was on a pity pot, and she says, I've got a lot to be grateful for. And I said, you do? Tell me about it. And she said, I got to go pick up trays on death row, and I thought I had it bad. Man, I want what she's got. She's got a relationship with her God that is unbelievable. That eldest daughter of mine wouldn't let me put my arms around her. She hated my guts. She would tell me, you've never been a mother to me, and how dare you try now. I can tell you that today, if I talk to her one time a day, it's usually five or more. She's blessed me with two grandchildren. I've got Sydney, who is four, and Logan, who is one. And I can be a grandmother. Only because of you people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Amber don't remember the drinking and drugging part of our life. Thank God. Alcoholics Anonymous gave her two sober parents that loved her and shared our God with her. And we are a family. We talked about it last night. We are a family that practices the traditions in our life. We pray together. We talk about things. We don't tiptoe around elephants in the middle of the room. And very grateful for that. It's a direct result from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Met my husband in recovery. Okay. Walked into my home group at 6 months sober. And we did lots of service work together. I wasn't asked if I wanted to get involved in recovery. I was told, this is what you're going to do. Just my sober, Lorenda. And it did. I had a lot of bad checks when I got sober. And they made me treasurer of the group. You know? Only in Alcoholics Anonymous. I washed ashtrays. I cleaned toilets. I would go to that meeting hall. And I would sit there in quiet by myself and feel the presence of God, because that was my safe place. Because when I came in here, I left all those playmates. And, hell, I drank them up. Didn't anybody want to be around me? There wasn't any playmates left. And I was in the process of making new connections in this program. And that can be a very lonely time. The process of getting sober, that can be a really lonely time. And so I hung on to coattails, and I hung on to the God that I knew was there. My first sponsor told me, you know, she asked me, she said, what's your conception of God? And I described it to her. This is what I described to you guys earlier. And she said, my God, I couldn't stay sober with that God either. And she said, write down what your God would have to be in order for you to even begin a conversation with him. So I did. First of all, he had to have a sense of humor. He had to be loving. He had to be caring. He had to be forgiving. And she gave me permission to have that God. She said, that is exactly what God is. That's where I began my journey. Went into that meeting hall and got involved. Got involved as alternate GSR and a group chair, GSR. I'm currently serving as alternate DCM. And Norris was treasurer, and they've asked me to take over that job since he's no longer with us. I'm going to cry. Because this is the first time I've done this without him. I can tell you, Norris asked me one time a real corny question. He said, where have you been all my life? And I said, God's been getting me ready for you. And we had no secrets from one another. Our relationship was beautiful.
We have a hell of a ride. And God was the center of that relationship. He was one of those beautiful teachers in my life. And he adopted our baby. He was an awesome father. And I'm very grateful that God gave him to me for the length of time he did. I get real selfish because I want him here with me. But in my spirit life, I know that he was a gift and nothing's permanent. Nothing's forever. Nothing's forever. But what I have learned is lessons. Lessons in relationships. Lessons to carry on. Taught me how to be a good parent. You know? We have a lot of good memories. We did things. We went places. We saw things. And I can tell you, we left nothing unsaid. We left nothing unsaid. He knew how I felt about him, and I knew how he felt about me, and that little girl did too. He died at peace with his God and with himself and with the love of Alcoholics Anonymous in his heart. And when he passed, he was saying the serenity prayer because it made the pain go away. He loved this fellowship, and he taught me love and appreciation for it. But I can tell you that I have this little bitty Cajun woman in my life that I talked to the morning of his funeral. And I got another little short fireball who is my sponsor who backed her up. And I was told you have 72 hours. You can do in 72 hours. At the end of that 72 hours, you're back in the saddle. You can kick, you can scream, you can cuss, you can throw a fit, you can cry, you can do anything, you can laugh, whatever you want to do in that saddle, but you're back in the saddle. You're going to keep your commitments in AA, and you're going to get back into living. And that's what I've done, because I have experienced the love of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'd always heard about. I knew it was there. I'd experienced alcoholics love before, but my God, you people have... They have wrapped their arms around me. You guys have loved me and made me believe that I can do this thing. Some of the girls I sponsors tell me, you're so strong. You know, you're so strong and you have so much courage. And I'm here to tell you that it's not me. That anything you see in me is the God that I know today is my God's strength. That's it. Nothing more, nothing less. Because what Lorinda wants to do is totally opposite. I am growing in my spirit life today. And I know that the pain I feel in sobriety today is growing pains. And I know that my life today, if you can imagine a road of life, and I always think of Route 66 because it's long, you know? And in that road, what I come upon is big piles of poop. You can't go around it. You can't go over it. You can't go under it. You got to walk through it. You can't stop in the middle of the poop, because if you do, it's all you see, smell, hear, feel, taste, whatever. So you got to keep walking. And how I keep walking is because of the steps, the traditions, my God and you people. And on the other side of that pile of poop, there's always a river of milk and honey. Always. I know that. And I know that the milk and honey is here. And I got to keep walking. I can't stop, because if I do, I drowned, or I take it for granted and I drowned. So I have to keep walking, and be assured that on the other side of that milk and honey is going to be another big pile of poop. It's got to keep walking, because I have no room for poop in my life today. You know, I have a beautiful life. I'm a mother. I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm grateful for that. The relationships in my life are healed. I've got a brother who is still in active addiction, and I always ask for folks to continue to pray for him. He knows what the program is. He had 2 years sober one time, went back out. I do have a nephew that's in recovery with me, and that's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. I've gone blank, so I think that's my way, God's way of telling me it's time to sit down and be quiet and get out of here on time so you guys can clean up. I want to thank you guys for a beautiful weekend. I've met some beautiful people. I've had an awesome time. And it was just what Amber and I needed. Thanks.